Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to our Saturday panel. Delighted to be joined by Mary White, sports writer and the author of Relentless, which is the story of the unbelievable success of the Cork ladies football team. Also Kieran Shannon, sports writer with the Irish Examiner. And Vincent Hogan, sports writer with the Irish Independent and author of Colm Cooper's autobiography, which is out next week.
Thursday week. Launch in Killarney, Nathan. So hopefully.
How long did it take you?
About 6 months, really, you know, from starting, sitting down. I spent a weekend with him in Killarney, and he's a good guy. He's, you know, do you know, I was just thinking about this. There's a certain lyricism to the way Kerry people talk that I think it makes it easier to ghostwrite them. Kieran, obviously, we will have done Donaghy's book, which was a great book. And I found it easy to get a flow in the narrative because of that lyricism that they with which they express themselves. So I hope people like it when they.
Do you approach him, or does he approach you, or how does the process work?
He approached me. I'd never actually spoken to Colm Cooper when I was asked to do his book, and
never interviewed him after a game.
Never spoken to him. So it was kind of a jump into the unknown. And yet, I was saying to Mary outside, because of the kind of fella he is, you kind of felt you knew him. You know that you didn't really anticipate it was going to be a difficult process, because I think he conducts himself so well, he communicates so well. There's a grace to Colm on and off the field, and I wasn't disappointed.
Is it difficult when you're going to write a book like that, where Kieran has written the book with Kieran Donaghy, where a lot has already been written about the era that Gooch has been a part of, not to go in with some sort of prejudice, some sort of thoughts of, well, we know a lot of these stories, that a lot of it, the story's already been told, that you don't want to go over old ground, but sort of you want to get his point of view on it as well?
Yeah, well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I was actually reading Kieran's book with Star, going down to Killarney, my first trip down to meet the Gooch, and you kind of think, oh God, I wish I had that story to myself, this type of thing, you know. But would you, I mean, you try maybe some of the stories, you can come at them from a different angle and just get his personal kind of perception on it. The one thing I'd say about Colm is I think people will find the book is a very personal book. There's a lot of really personal stuff in it that people wouldn't be aware of. And there's also an edge to him. I think people maybe don't see that a lot because he's very gentle in the way he communicates with the outside world. But there's an edge to him that I think people will find interesting in the book.
It's a pretty pressurized situation for a writer, I'd imagine, during the summer, where you have to go on with the day job, and every Saturday and Sunday you're down at a game, and at the back of your mind there's November, October, November, this has to be ready, this has to be released for. Is it a different style of writing for you?
Well, I think...
I guess you're well used to it at this
Kieran
stage.
Kieran and Mary have both done books, so they understand where I'm coming from here. I think January the 1st is when you panic, and you kind of think, oh my God, what have I taken on here? I think I might have said to you, going back a few months, you know, when you asked me to come on one of these programs, I said, leave me alone. You know, leave me alone for a few months, because I just wanted to go into a bunker and do it. But yeah, you've got to be very disciplined. One thing I try to do is get into a process of 3 or 4 mornings, just get up at 6 in the morning and try to get 2 or 3 hours work done on the book before the day job kicks in. And you've got to be very disciplined. But I've done a few books now, and I know how to get around it. But the one thing I need to do is I need to be up and running by January the 1st. Otherwise, I'm in a state of panic.
And you're happy with the end result?
I'm very happy with it. And Colm is very happy with it. And, you know, you kind of can't take reviews personally, but you do. So I'll be very interested to see how it's interpreted by people. But I think it's a really good book. I think it's a very personal book.
Yeah, we're all looking forward to it. And I think actually Colm's going to be in with us over the next couple of weeks to talk about it as well. We are going to talk on the panel today about this Dublin side and their greatness and the level of greatness, and whether they've already reached the greatest men's Gaelic football team of all time, or whether maybe they've a little bit to go. Kieran, when you look at last Sunday's performance, and when you look at the journey this team have taken over the last 5-6 years, have you seen any better?
I think they're obviously up in the debate. I wrote myself that I think that they've possibly edged. I mean, the first comparison that they always came up with was being the best Dublin team of all time, and Heffo's Army, obviously the great team of the 70s, and I think they've gone ahead of them. And I did write that I think they've edged Tyrone and Kerry are the naughties, but I am surprised by how little that has been even acknowledged, as in I think that those two teams have been almost disrespected in the debate. I think people, I think there's a case that Dublin still maybe have a bit to go. I personally think they've edged it because possibly of I think they're the best league team we've ever seen as well. I mean, they're absolute consistency and, you know, the word I would use is relentless. You know, that I think that's the same as the Cork Ladies footballers. Part of their dominance wasn't just peaking for September, like the success rate they had in the league as well. So I think that possibly edges them. But I think that the Tyrone team, like Dara Shea made the point that he thinks even Mayo are probably better than the Kerry team and any team of the last 30 years. I wouldn't go as far as that. I think they're a brilliant team, but I think the Tyrone and Kerry teams of the noughties have to be up there in the reckoning. And, you know, people have nearly forgotten how good those two teams were.
Yeah, Vincent, what are the criteria you'd look at when you're judging greatness?
I personally think you judge it on the opposition at the time. And it's why I would say that the Kilkenny hurling team, their record, I think in a possible 19 finals under Cody, they made 15 of them. They won 11 of them. But they had that extraordinary rivalry with Cork. You know, Kilkenny won in 02, 03. Cork came in 04 and 05. And Kilkenny-Cork in the 06 final was one of the most physical, intense All-Ireland finals I've ever seen. And that was the rivalry. That was an incredibly defining rivalry at the time. And it actually... Cork hung in there. You see, if you think they were beaten by Waterford in a replay in 07, and then in 08 you had half an hour of extraordinary hurling in their semi-final with Kilkenny, and that was the end of it then. And Kilkenny just kicked on, and then they were met by a Tipperary team who just fronted up to them. And so that's how I would define greatness, that you meet rivals who are right on your toes. And if you think of Kilkenny, when Tip finally nailed them in 2010, we thought that might be them.
Mm.
They came back and won the next two. When they were gone in the beaten in 2013, we thought that might was them gone. They came back and won the next two. So I think that's what, in my view, certainly in the men's side of things, that's why I would put Kilkenny maybe top of the tree.
Mary, when you look at the men's side of things and you look at this Dublin side compared to the Kerry team that we've seen recently, compared to the Tyrone team, even not even going back to the 80s and the Dublin and the Kerry team, would you already look at this Dublin side and have them ahead of Kerry and Tyrone?
I probably would have Kerry up there, I suppose. They're just who I kind of grew up looking at, the likes of Maurice Fitzgerald and the O'Shea's, and kind of what Paddy brought to it as well, I suppose. Is, you know, I like, you know, having that little bit of bite. I think Kerry kind of had that. They had, you know, I suppose, personality as well. That's probably what I would look at. A little bit of humility as well, I think, goes a long way. I suppose when you look at the Cork Ladies footballers, they brought that to the table as well. So for me, I'd probably go with Kerry as opposed to Dublin.
Yeah, you used two interesting words there. Firstly, personality. And when we look at this Dublin side, one of the interesting things actually in today's papers is that there's an awful lot of interviews with the Dublin players, who various writers at various stages of the week have managed to sit down with them and get a really good insight and get to know a little bit more. Because if there's one thing about this Dublin side, it's that quite a lot of them we don't know very much about, Vincent.
Mm. It's a bugbear of mine, and I'm sure of Kieran's as well. I was talking outside about, even if you look at the press conference after Sunday's win, my God, it was hard to believe that this team had won in All-Ireland. And, you know, Jim Gavin was asked about, did he have any sympathy for Mayo? And, you know, losing by a point again, and you're thinking back to 51, and my God, the torture they're going through. And his answer was, we've been there. It was tough. We lost a league final this year by a point. And you're sitting there and you're thinking, is he serious? And that was the level of the press conference after the All-Ireland. And Stephen Cluxton asked about the difficulty with his kickouts in the first half. He said, I don't know, I don't catch any of my own kickouts. It was just an extraordinarily, almost borderline hostile thing, I would say, where what I would read is a contempt for the media. And, you know, then you see these interviews with people who are very interesting. Mm. And suddenly this week you get some insight into these guys who are really interesting. You know, when I think back to the Dublin team of, say, 74, and You know, I was 14 in 74, a school kid in Nenagh, County Tipperary. And the colour of that team that came through, I mean, people would imagine that you're from the country, so in the rivalry with Kerry, you'd always fancy, you'd want Kerry to win. I was the opposite. I thought when they came through in the Hill, if you think, for example, in 73, in the All-Ireland final in 73, Brian Mullins...
74, is it?
No, in 73, right. Brian Mullins was selling programmes. Yeah. Sean Doherty and Jimmy Keaveney were stewards on Hill 16. They were a million miles away from an All-Ireland. They were in Division 2 of the National League.
Clay Kilkenny.
Starting, yeah, they were in Division 2 of the National League starting 1974. And they came through, and what they did was they brought a soccer crowd into Croke Park. I don't know if you remember. You're too young to remember, obviously. They started singing You'll Never Walk Alone. They didn't have the crepe hats or anything. They were
this was on Hill 16.
On Hill 16. They were a different crowd, and they brought a different energy to the GAA. And if you look at any of the shots from the end of the 74 final against Galway, it's nearly close to being abandoned because the crowd have come in off the hill, and behind the goals, there's just literally 1,000 people have come onto the side of the pitch. And just the colour of those guys, he brought Hickey back from rugby. David Hickey had given up on Dublin football. He brought him back from rugby. Brought Keaveney back. That famous story of the young boy in the car saying, what about Jimmy Keaveney? He never misses a free. He comes back in. And I grew up with that kind of colour and access to these people. One of the first jobs I got in 1985, they were in the All-Ireland final, Dublin against Kerry again. One of the first jobs with the Independent I was got, go and interview Kevin Heffernan. Now I thought, oh my God, how am I going to get Kevin Heffernan to talk to me? He sat for 2 hours in the Burlington with me. Couldn't have been better. And said to me afterwards, there's my phone number if you want to know anything more.
Wow.
So that's where I'm coming from. The access we had, you think of the Meath team, the Meath-Cork battles, 87 and 88. You think last Sunday was intense? Go look at those games. But we used to go into the dressing rooms afterwards. Mm. I remember being told to get off my effing towel by one of the Meath defenders.
Kevin Foley.
Yeah. but you know, this is where we're coming from.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
suddenly these barriers are down, and it's just depressing.
Yeah, like obviously you would like it for your reader that if we knew more, but there are times where we get to see an insight into them. So to say that they're bland or colourless or we don't have any access, let's say I interviewed Kevin McManaman last December, and he's been in here as well. Fascinating, colourful, very open personality. The same with I remember being in here actually reviewing one of the Sunday papers. It was the year last year, I suppose, that that Jack McCaffrey was off, and he gave an interview, a great interview to Dermot Crowe. If you go through them, we get an idea, but there's no doubt that there's a blandness and on message, which isn't ideal. But and it's funny, we do get this when they're playing. I mean, what people are saying about Dublin, we used to hear this about Kilkenny in their pomp, and now that they've all retired, sure,
great characters.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Jackie Turrell has a very good book out at the moment. A couple of weeks ago at the under 21, before the under 21 final, I sat down with Eddie Brennan the morning after Jackie's book launch. Actually had a 3-hour interview with him. Fascinating character, opened up in a way that he never could have in his time. And I think that's what we're going to see a few years time, that when these Dublin lads finishing up, I believe that it's a point of principle for them that there'll be no book to come out. I mean, although Philly McMahon has a book, Jason Sherlock has a book, but let's just say certain things will be off topic. But I believe that you can't say that they don't have any personality or character.
I mean, we just don't see it.
Yeah,
we just don't see it, but we see it on the field. I mean, like those guys, to have the, Mary used the word humility, well, to stay grounded, to keep winning at the level and performing at the level they are, you know, is a good reflection on them.
Are we being very harsh on Jim Gavin and on Dublin? Like, you're there saying that the atmosphere in the post-match press conference, it almost feels like there's this hostility during the media. And you mentioned Kilkenny. Would you have said that about Brian Cody?
Well, the one thing I'd say to you is, I'm saying nothing here that I haven't said to Jim's face. So he knows exactly where I'm coming from. Look, Jim's answer to me when I put it to him, because in 2013 there was a similar press conference, and which I asked Stephen Cluxton. There was nobody speaking to Stephen Cluxton. He'd been brought in. So out of courtesy, I said, I'll ask Stephen Cluxton a question. And it was the day of the semi-final against Kerry, where Kerry got 3 goals in the first half, and Gooch was orchestrating everything from centre forward. And out of courtesy, I just brought Cluxton into the conversation. I asked him, did the movement of the Kerry forwards give you different problems to anything you encountered before this year? And his answer to me was, I don't know, I wasn't marking any of them. Now, if somebody thinks that that's acceptable and that's not being pig ignorant in a press conference, well, fair enough. Maybe I'm missing something here. Don't come in if you want to be like that. You know, I would prefer they didn't come in.
Does he not have to come in? He's the captain. There's an expectancy.
Not after a semi-final. I mean, I don't know why he was coming in after a semi-final anyway. But the point is, if you're going to come in, engage with people. If you don't want to engage with people, don't come in. That's the point I make. I agree totally. These guys are really interesting guys, and they have the humility that Mary used the word humility. You don't win the way they won last Sunday without that humility. I'm not saying by any stretch that they're not interesting people. We just don't get to know them.
Do you get the sense, Mary, that Jim Gavin will never let the guard down while he's in charge of Dublin? He's a man with a military background. Everything we know about this Dublin side is it is military precision. That, like, I think what frustrated a lot of people was the clip right on the full-time whistle where, rather than the Jim Gavin we saw in 95 when he drops to his knees and he's his hands in his air, he just takes off the headset, calmly puts it down. There's barely even a smile on his face. And maybe it is the Mayo angle that there's so much emotion on one side that it exasperates the situation with Dublin. We're just overly critical of the reaction.
Maybe so, but I suppose it's not a world I'm probably au fait with. You know, I wouldn't be sitting in the same press conferences as the guys, and I'm coming at it from a completely different angle. You know, I'd love to see if he did open up. You know, I suppose, you know, was it Don Logue referred to the Kilkenny players in his autobiography as Stepford Wives? I think maybe there's an element to that, and it's just robotic for him. It's, you know, part of his personality. You know, I would hope that things would change, but I can't see them changing. You know, I've never spoken to Jim, so I can't say.
It's interesting even now when you look at the media. So players who don't talk and personality, I don't know how many Kerry games I covered down the years when I went up to Tomás O'Shea and said, any chance of a quick word? And the head was down, no chance. And that was the same with all the O'Shea's. You mentioned the Kilkenny hurlers, like Tommy Walsh, as we've said to Tommy, where was this guy when we were talking to you after the games? It was just never there. That actually, in 10 years' time, we could well be sitting here with three Dublin players of this era, and they are opening up.
See, you've mentioned two people there, Tommy Walsh and Tomás O'Shea. Neither of them wanted to do interviews, and you don't have an issue with that. I mean, some guys are comfortable with it and other guys aren't. And in those two guys' cases, they didn't want to do it. They weren't comfortable with it. Now we're getting to see their personalities, and they're great characters and great personalities. But I've no issue with that if someone doesn't want to do it. But this blanket wall coming down and saying nobody engages on any kind of an interesting level, it's just soul-destroying.
Is that not part, though, of what makes a great team, in that you have to have this buy-in, you have to have everybody on the same wavelength, and that if it's a rule, if it's just an unwritten rule, that you buy into the team culture, and that's what it is, that's what makes them successful?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't agree with that. I suppose when it comes to the Cork Ladies footballers, and when Eamon Ryan was involved, not once did he have any stipulation that a player couldn't give an interview, and they didn't buy into his, in the sense of they didn't kind of follow those rules from him. Eamon actually never had any rules, he just had high expectations, and that's what he'd say himself. But the girls weren't churning out the same, you know, stuff either that you'd get the entire time. They're quite willing to open up. I suppose as well, we kind of forget as well that these people are putting their lives, you know, on hold for their dreams, and they're putting everything into this. And I suppose sometimes we kind of tend to forget about that as well. But
I suppose I'm a bit uncomfortable here, Nathan, that I've almost single-handedly turned this into an issue about Dublin's media relations.
Because it's actually, in the scheme of things, it's only a small thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're talking about greatness. And
I know definite your listeners will be saying, who gives a toss if they talk to the media or not?
Media made its own bed by exploiting players for headlines. Nostalgia can skew the memory. When you were younger, and sure, everything was better back then. Nice journal moan about the Dubs interviews with the media. The talking point should be their on-pitch persona. Your readers do not give a hoot what the books they read. Their favourite act at Electric Picnic, or any other human element journals want. That rubbish is not of interest to us.
There you go. Yeah.
I don't know if I would fully agree with that. It would be, and it is nice to read the papers today. So let's, on that note, then get back to what makes Dublin great and where they are in the pantheon of greatness. When you're looking at Dublin's level of greatness, how much do you factor what is in their favour. So playing the vast majority of games at Croke Park, they don't have to travel long distances for training, they have the best facilities, the biggest backroom team, seemingly on limited resources.
Well, part of that's smart. I mean, I think a big move in their development was moving the league, what they call the Spring Series, into Croke Park in 2011, just to bring it to another level of familiarity. I think that was a very smart move by them. But, I mean, the reason why Dublin are on top is they're ticking all the boxes, both in terms of, you have John Costello at board level, you have Jim Gavin in the management, and then you have the likes of Cluxton in the dressing room as players. I would say they're the best coach team in the country in across GAA, and they're right there at the level. Like, they're the kind of a post-Beijing team, I would say. You know, like the sort of high performance, the Gary Keegan best practice, this word that can become a cliche in Irish sports circles, but when they talk about the process, it's just about basically best practice.
Well, the USM Force being the best at getting better.
Yeah, that's exactly it, and that's what they're the best at, and that's why I would say Mayo are the team pushing them the best, because they have a similar mindset, but they have to get even better at being at the best, and that's where these guys are at. I mean, you'd have like the fact you take, it's been said about Jim Gavin and about his media relations, but I thought one of the fascinating things was, I said this a few weeks ago, but after the 2014 game against Donegal, he gave a press conference a few weeks later, and he basically put the hand up and said, I got that wrong. That was on me. Now, how often do you get to see a manager do that? And he brought in, let's say, the likes of Jason Sherlock. He would have consulted. Mary has a basketball background as well, the likes of Mark Ingall. And they are the best coach team that there has ever been in Gaelic football, for sure. And that is why, like that they're able to perform under the pressure that they were able to last Sunday, in terms of just how everybody has got improved in that setup. Like, you take someone like Dean Rock. Dean Rock wasn't on the panel in 2012. He was let go. And how he came back, and how he, even in 2015, people were questioning his contribution from play. Look at how he has evolved. And that's from work to Paddy Andrews. Paddy Andrews was a cornerback in 2009. Look what he's become. Okay, he didn't have his best game last Sunday, but, you know, he has been what that guy has developed into, and that is the environment that they have created on that training ground. And that is why, and so all those other things that we can talk about, and there's nobody stopping any other team, because Jason Sherlock's a volunteer, and the way that it's linked up, like, I believe Jason is being linked now with the minor job. Like, Jason Sherlock, like, a lot of people would say, oh, the high profile gig, being in with the senior team. Mm. And that shows you how Dublin are thinking, because they're thinking of 5 years' time that Jason could be the post Jim Gavin guy.
With that in mind, are they looking towards Kerry with that sort of attitude?
They're only looking at themselves. That's all you can be, right? So they're competing against that was the same with the Cork Ladies footballers. The other teams were just a measure to keep you honest.
No, but what I mean in terms of keeping coaches involved, so that there's, in Kerry, say in most counties, the minor job is seen as a workup, whereas you look at, in Kerry, Jack O'Connor will take the senior job and then he might start again somewhere else, and you have this intelligence that stays within the county at all times.
Yeah, I think the great achievement of this Dublin team, and I don't know how you coach this or if it's possible to coach it, is the mental strength that they have. And they've won four of those finals by a point, one of them in a replay. They're getting home, you could say, by the skin of their teeth. But the moment Killian O'Connor's shot hit the post last Sunday, and you look at the reaction as the ball is coming down, it's only the Dublin players are alive under that post. Mm. And you could almost see the winning point coming, because they have that ability to see out a tight game like no other team I've ever seen. And that's what's defining this team, their mental strength, their resilience. Again, going back to Mary's word, the humility that you need to be alive under that post when you need to be alive. That's their greatness. And I think, look, as I said, I'm a bit sorry we got into the media thing, because that's not really relevant to what they're looking for here. They're looking for the five in a row, in my idea. Mm. The five in a row barrier that will distinguish them from any other male team in GAA history. And right now, you're looking at it because of their ability to see out games. I mean, people are looking at Kerry with the four All-Ireland minors in a row. They're looking at this kid Clifford, who's one of the most extraordinary talents I've seen. But I was talking to Tomás O'Shea about this, and he said, if you thought of parachuting Clifford right now into that Dublin team, you could see him being exceptional, because there's so many strong, mentally strong characters in that team, that Conor Callaghan could come in this year and have an ordinary enough start, and yet there was no great pressure on him because others were picking up the slack. If Clifford went into the Kerry team right now, I'm not sure the mental strength is there for a teenager to become the main man, which he would have to be the way that Kerry team is evolving. So the key to this Dublin team, and to win four finals out of five by a single point, is pointing in one thing and one thing only. They have a mental resilience right now that nobody comes close to.
Mary, when you look at the run of success that Cork ladies football team had with a five in a row, with a six in a row, does that all sound very familiar, that mental resilience that was there?
Absolutely. Like, Cork won 11 All-Ireland titles. During Eamon Ryan's tenure, he won 29 national titles out of a possible 33. But out of the 11 All-Irelands they won five by a point. They won one by 2 points. And if you remember in 2014, the comeback, you know, 10 points down, 16 minutes to go. You can't teach that stuff. And when it comes to good teams and good coaches, the one thing that Eamon Ryan did was he allowed his players to develop the ability to make their own decisions on the pitch. So when everything went arseways on the pitch against Dublin that day in 2014, the players were on the pitch to make those decisions, and that's mental toughness. And I don't know whether that's something you can teach.
Oh, it's absolutely something you can teach. I mean, and it's a gradual thing. Like with Dublin, one of the things I go back to it, like, this has been quite a process. Started under Pat Kilroy, obviously there was the famous start of Learweig's game, and then the way they approached 2010. And like, because there was a correlation often. Dublin had a terrible record in the league away from home. And I remember they won a league game up at the start of 2010. Bernard Brogan gave an interview and he talked about how they were targeting winning on the road. Because that softness that was possibly there, it wasn't prominent, or it didn't reveal itself, let's say, through Leinster in June, July, but come August in those sticky, nitty games. And they started to, I remember thinking, very important game, we're talking about that spring series in 2011, they beat Kerry by a point. I remember Bernard Brogan getting a last winning point to win it, and they beat Kerry by a point. And actually, that's one of the huge things. I really do think, like Kilkenny, Jackie Tyrrell talks about how Kilkenny wanted to keep teams under the cosh. They would talk about, let's put hurling out of their minds. Dublin's record in the league is phenomenal. Like, and even the way that they have particularly have tried to keep, I know they lost the league final this year, but they paced themselves slightly different. But even, let's say, in Tralee, there were 2 points down going into injury time, and how they pulled that to keep the run going, the unbeaten run going. How they have, there's been years where they've beaten Mayo and Castlebar. They have, like, the amount of people, that's why I think I was in here 2 weeks ago, and the point it was, some one of the writers was making in the Sunday papers, was they haven't been in close games like Mayo have been through the championship. But I was saying, Dublin have been in loads of close games this year in the league.
Drew three games
in the league. Yeah, and it came down to that crunch. And let's say it's like the games against Kerry, like the close games they've had with Kerry, let's say the two semi-finals in 2013 and 2016, like the James O'Donoghue came on, kicked a point to put Kerry 3 points ahead. Philly McMahon just goes up, brings it back to two. They just kept going, and then O'Gara and McManaman and Connolly kicked the scores to put them ahead. They just have conditioned themselves. But the other thing, they're conditioning themselves like that on the training ground. And Mary's right, like it's that decision making comes from creating it in training. They're not just playing 15 versus 15. They're doing situations where, right, lads, you're three down. Right, there's 2 minutes to go. What do you do? And that comes from, I go back to Jason Sherlock's coaching. It's absolutely pivotal to this, because he comes from a sport which is a high knowledge of coaching, generations of proper coaching. And I think that's where they're ahead, both in how they're digging it out in things like the National League and on that training ground.
Well, that's Joe Schmidt as well, isn't it? Going back to the Ireland All Blacks game and the try the All Blacks got at Lansdowne Road, and going back at the end of training and saying, what was it, 2 minutes, 47 seconds? How do we hold this out? How do we hold this out? Trying to replicate in-game scenarios. When you're talking about the mentality and sort of the on-pitch leadership that's there then, like, I do wonder, could Cork almost win those games then without the coach on the side, that all the work is done in advance, that once the game starts, you're on your own, you take responsibility for your own actions, you're not spending half the game looking at the sideline wondering what do we do next?
You absolutely take responsibility on the pitch, because when you get to Croke Park, you can hear your coach. Now obviously you're going to have runners on, but if you've ever been to ladies football final, you know vuvuzelas, and you just can't hear a thing, it's screaming kids. But I think that's how Dublin lost that 2014 All-Ireland final, because when they were 10 points up, they were looking to the line. They didn't know what they had, you know, they got everyone behind the ball, and it just completely backfired on them. Whereas you look at the likes of the leaders that Cork had, you had the likes of Juliet Murphy, who's a former international basketball player, you know, is used to high-pressured situations, clock running down, being a point down, trying to bring it back on the basketball court. And she has that ability to stay calm and dictate the play. And she, I suppose, other players by osmosis then kind of, you know, grasp that. I don't think a coach can teach that to a certain extent.
Coach teaches you to figure it out yourself.
Yeah.
That's the definition of a coach.
That's a good coach.
Yeah, exactly. So that they become independent. But you create that environment for that. You create those situations in training. Like, I mean, I go back to it, like the mind or the cultural shift there's been in coaching in this country, and we mentioned, let's say, the Irish boxing and the high performance culture they would have brought in with Gary Keegan. Like, that's one of the things that they talked about was, after the first qualifying tournament, they had only one boxer qualified for Beijing, and they sat down and they realised, like, we're underperforming here. And they realised, they brought in the whole backroom team, and they realised the only people who aren't here are the boxers themselves, and we're making them be robotic. Like, oh, Kenny Egan, Billy Walsh, like Vincent would have even a better relationship with Billy. Like, you're talking about a guy to give you a great copy and insight. Mm-hmm. Fascinating. And I remember him talking about how Kenny Egan would be looking early over at the corner. Right. What jab do I throw? What you do is you work that through with him on the training, or in training. Kenny, what would you do if you did do that again? Why did you choose that? You get the coach gets the athlete to figure it out in training, so that when it comes to actual competition, they're not looking to you. They've figured it out themselves, but you've guided them. That's coaching.
How long does it take to instill that sort of mindset? Because when Eamon Ryan came in at Cork, like, they hadn't won a Munster title. They go and win 11 of the next 12. Is that an instant within the first year you can notice that sort of change coming within the players?
Well, I think what a lot of people probably forget when it comes to Cork's reign is that the winter, the 2 months before Eamon Ryan came in, Cork clubs had won the three All-Ireland titles, senior, intermediate and junior. So Juliet Murphy, the likes of Juliet Murphy, Rena Buckley had won an All-Ireland with Dunamore. The likes of Breed Stack, Deirdre O'Reilly, Sinead O'Reilly, Nurita Kelly had won an All-Ireland intermediate with Rockchapel. And then you had the likes of Lane Hart, Valerie Mulcahy and Amy O'Shea winning a junior with Rockbawn. The belief is there. But I suppose what Eamon came in, and people, I suppose it's been well documented, the rivalries that were in the dressing room, Eamon didn't address that. That's another good coaching thing that he did. He didn't address it. He left them figure it out for themselves. Like, they were going to a Cork game and they weren't even talking to each other inside in the dressing room. So it just kind of diffused the situation. But the belief was there. They had lost, as you said, they were getting hammered left, right and centre by Kerry and Waterford. So they had the hunger and they had the desire. But I suppose the final piece of the jigsaw was Eamon Ryan, and what he brought was a work ethic, in the sense that he was willing to actually, every year they could see, he was willing to go down to a Cork City match or a Cork City training, see how they train. Valerie Mulcahy would go down to Killarney and go for a kicking session with the Gooch. Year in, year out, they were upping their game and upping the bar for everybody else. And I think, you know, going back to your point, it doesn't just change overnight, it's a gradual thing, but everyone bought into it at the same time. And Eamon was a father figure, in a sense that when you look at the likes of Rena Buckley and all them younger players who came in, who had won, they were now aligning themselves with the mentality that the likes of Valerie Mulcahy and Juliet Murphy had, who hadn't won anything. And I think it was a combination of things. I don't think it's very much black and white.
We're getting plenty of texts in on this. We'll get to them in a moment. We'll take a quick break. We're talking about the Dubs and just how great this side are. We were talking earlier about what they need to do to cement their place. So you're saying win the five in a row, all questions are finished. When you look at the finals and say you compare them to the Kerry team of the four in a row, in the first couple of finals, they destroyed Dublin. Like, this great Dublin team, they went out and they destroyed them in the final. is it a mark of a great team where you edge out an epic, as Dublin have done on a couple of occasions? Or is it the mark of the great team where you can go into a final and actually play to your very, very best, no matter who the opposition are?
Well, there's a lot more to being great than that, because that is, you don't control that, right? So, like, that Kerry team that beat, I suppose Dublin did grow old. I mean, that's the way they've put it themselves. David Hickey has put it, like, obviously Dublin beat them in 76-77. Dublin probably did very well to get back to those, but back then there was only a few teams. Offaly then obviously came along. But I go back to it. Dublin have won whatever way you want to win it. They've won a lot of games. Like, obviously, the way that, even though the All-Ireland quarter-final has become, they've made it look like a formality, but it's not as straightforward as that. They're playing to their own standard. It's like the Kilkenny Hurlers. Like, Kilkenny, that, and go back to that term that Mary used in the book, relentless. They're relentless regardless of the scoreboard. Like, Kilkenny's demeanour never changed, whether they were 8-up or 8-down. Like, even talking to Eddie Brennan about it, about their feeling. I remember even one of my great colleagues, Enda McAvoy, in the Trib, after the Galway game in 05, wondering, you know, could this be the end of the team? But they saw it as the start. You know, they felt that they just ran out of time against Galway, against Galway in that semi-final. And it's like that with Dublin. They just keep playing. And so, like, when people say, oh, how can you say they're a great team when they're only winning these games by a point? The play, to keep that word, you know, the composure and the decision making under pressure that they have. And then it's the same, they're playing to their own standards, whether they're 9 or 10 points up. They just are still playing away, because they're playing for something. The biggest thing they're playing for is the spot and to get into the playing rotation. I mean, Bernard Brogan comes off against Kildare, scores 5 points, and he still doesn't get a start, and he only comes on with 3 minutes to go. And one of the things I found fascinating, and it goes back to where Gavin has them, like, Dermot Connolly was benched for that All-Ireland final. He was, as much as the front he put on after the whole, was it after the Westmeath game, and again challenged the media about excess, we're not going back into that whole thing, but he did not start, he did not give him much time against Tyrone. He did not start him, and okay, as much as it took Connolly to come on and actually win it, the fact that they were still within a point without Connolly, like, I would say you're going to see Dermot Connolly has been basically told, Dermot, we can't have the situations that we've had, because there was a couple of black cards at the end of the league, and you're going to see a better Dermot Connolly next year, and that's dangerous. But Gavin, actually, it could have been so easy for him to resist, to I'll just put in one of the most talented players. He was not happy with Dermot Connolly in certain things, and therefore he did not, even Dermot Connolly did not start in that All-Ireland.
Yeah, I thought that was very interesting as the summer went on, because he was true to his word, and one of the phrases that he often comes out with in his post-match interviews, Jim Gavin, is staying true to the traditions of Dublin football. And he seemed to do that with Jeremy Connolly this year, that there was, even though he didn't really say it publicly, he felt let down by Jeremy Connolly and what happened against Carlow, and Jeremy Connolly had to be punished for that, whatever about the saga off the field and what sort of ban he got, that internally he had to show the group that this wasn't acceptable.
Yeah, I had a suspicion leading into the final that ideally Jim Gavin would like to have won the All-Ireland without Dermot and just send that message that Kieran is talking about, but because Mayo put so much pressure on them, he had to bring him in at half time, bringing in himself and McManaman at half time, and to have that calibre of player on the bench, you know, we've all been talking the last few weeks, the strength of the Dublin bench compared to the Mayo bench, and there's no doubt that was the difference. Over 77, 78 minutes, to be bringing in that calibre of player was an enormous weapon for Gavin to have, and he has very much been pushing that thing that it's I think if you go back, was it the drawn game against Mayo last year where Dublin were a point up?
Yeah, exactly.
They got a free.
Yeah, and he pushed Kieran Kilkenny away.
Connolly looks for the ball and goes for a Hail Mary point, and then
Killian went up. And
they come down.
And that could have cost them the
I think that's the type of thing that Jim Gavin despises, and he would not have forgotten that. So, you know, yes, Connolly did a great service to Dublin in the second half and all of that, but I suspect deep down Jim Gavin would have been quite happy to leave him on the bench.
The one thing that stood out in the final, well, probably 10 minutes was with extra time and injury time and all of that, was when Mayo went 2 points up, arguably two of the finest points of the game were the 2 points that brought Dublin back into it, and the wonderful pass from Connolly that could have resulted in the goal. And I think James McCarthy scored a brilliant point, curling it in from the right-hand side as well. Did you think for a second when Mayo were 2 points up that Dublin were gone from this game, that Mayo had this won?
No, and that's a mark of Dublin. You just didn't. And I think they got 3 points in 4 minutes. And that's what Dublin do. They just have that ability to just squeeze when they need to squeeze. But it's funny, going back to the debate about can you coach that resilience into teams, I don't think Brian Cody coached it into Kilkenny. But what he did do was he looked for self-sufficient players. He looked for tough players who in club hurling you could see an almost luminous character in them, and that self-sufficiency is what Kilkenny relied upon. I don't think it was something that was coached into them, but to me you're looking at Dublin players who have changed before our eyes. I mean, Kieran talked about Dean Rock there. The mental resilience of Dean Rock is one of the stories of that Dublin team, and for him to be the player that did most damage to Mayo from play, nobody would have foreseen that. And a couple of years ago, people would have said, well, maybe Dean isn't psychologically strong enough for this. Well, by God, he has transformed himself. And that's what's really interesting, that under Gavin's regime, really good players are becoming better players in front of our eyes. And that's some achievement.
Yeah, it was said, I think, all around me at the match, 10 minutes in, when Dean Rock had missed that first free, that he's going to have one of those days, never mind with the place ball, that he just won't have any influence on the game at all. And what was four points
in
play?
That's the mentality of the top free takers. Like a term I remember being, I would use it quite a bit myself now, having a good shitty day. You know, like before, the guys would say, this isn't my day. But you take, like you look at the top free takers, like someone like O'Shea McConville missed the penalty, obviously, in 2002. And how he responded, he got the goal, obviously, nailed one or two crucial frees, obviously one of the best free takers. So someone like Dean Rock to have, I think the winning, the free before halftime, you can talk about whether it should have been a free, the free before halftime was a massive kick. It was as important as the one at the end, I thought, because then you would have been questioning, God, Dean's off today. He nailed it, like, and that was a huge score. And going back, like, what's interesting about the Kilkenny players is, again, someone like Eddie Brennan, how he didn't have it at the start of his career, and but he worked it out. And someone like Jackie Turrell, in his book, is one of the fascinating things is the work he would have done with brother Damien, who was a bit of a mentor stroke. I think he has some discipline, counselling stroke, psychology. And the work that someone like Jackie Turrell, even though he was winning All-Irelands, he wasn't playing near his optimum. And about how someone like that developed. So it's not something you either have or you haven't. It's something that's developed. And I think the journey that, let's say, the Dublin players, because it was said about Cluxton, we see him as the ultimate winner now, but you know, in some of their toughest defeats, Cluxton was central to them. You know, the famous turnover in 2007, they had Armagh on the rack in 2003, or then Armagh turned the screw and he flipped. And just how, and like, even it's funny, the 2 years that Dublin have lost league finals by a point, they've won the they've ended up winning the All Ireland by a point. Coming down to free, like, I remember they lost that league final against Cork in 2011, and their free taking, particularly over on the right hand side, was weak. And one of the things they identified from it was Cluxton's coming up to take all those. And it was the same with Dean Rock making the adjustment from the league final. I think McBohan spoke about it during the week, about how he just tweaked it. And so they have that capacity to just review, win and learn is their mentality, and they're going to just keep getting better.
Yeah, I wonder, does that then lead into that final free for Mayo from out on the left hand side? And I know a lot of the stats leading up to it were the Killian O'Connor is quite metronomic from certain areas of the pitch, but out on the left hand side in a similar position last year, the ones he missed, and he's such an influential player in that Mayo team that it's very difficult to turn around to Killian O'Connor and say, you can take all the frees, but out here we're going to give it to someone else.
Yeah, I think he'd earned the right to take them. You know, like, there was a bit of slippage this year. I think Rob Carroll had some stats that I think he's been by far the best free taker over the last 5 or 6 years. This year there was a bit of slippage. And you know, depending on how it goes next year, like when Killian was blackcarded in the semi-final. Jason Doherty stepped up, and that's because Killian has missed a lot of leagues through the years, and Jason Doherty would have taken some frees. And depending how it goes,
Jason Doherty
year,
gone off 30 seconds before Killian O'Connor won that free as
so
well.
So there you go, and Alan, something small. You're on about like someone like Alan Freeman, who has, I remember Killian getting injured in the 2013 semi-final, and Alan Freeman stepped up and got them over the line against Tyrone in that semi-final. Alan Freeman left the panel after two league games. You know, is that where you're talking about the Ents, you know, that we're at Kenny Mayo afford losing someone even like that?
When we're talking there, and we're talking a lot about Kilkenny and the players coming through and the way they managed to maintain that success and the way the Cork ladies managed to maintain that success, you implement this culture, it suddenly takes hold, and all the young players that come through buy into that. We're seeing that with Dublin now. Like, we're talking five in a row. God knows where this ends.
Yeah, and like, you know, we were kind of talking outside, you know, like, where, how do Mayo get over this now? Like, you know, what do they have to do to bring it on next year? Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Dublin did do it, because the thing is it's very much down to your mentor, like, you know, and Jim Gavin is obviously a good mentor for them, but then it's, you know, the other guys on the pitch, the older guys, the younger guys are looking up to, and I think sometimes people underestimate the influence of that, and I know I keep going back to these footballers, but I mean, Juliet Murphy is just one of the greatest female sports athletes in the country when it comes to that, and mentoring younger people. And you had the likes of Breed Stack and Breed Cork, Irina Buckley, who now is, you know, the greatest, most successful, you know, GAA player of all time with 18 All-Ireland medals, like, and to keep going to the well year in and year out. But it goes back to humility as well, in the sense that how do they keep doing that? They keep doing it because they know that they're only a small cog in this, you know, in the effort that they're making. And I think that going back to reality year in and year out is what makes them pursue year in and year out and take their game to the next level.
Yeah, like, we talk about depth, and we spoke about it so much ahead of the final, of the big names that were on the bench, of Flynn, of Connolly, of Brogan, but even somebody like Cormac Costello, who turned the game last year, who we all expected would be an automatic first choice. So it doesn't just go from players who turn 30 and maybe Jim Gavin looks at them a different way. Even if you're the young guy coming in, there's an understanding that you got to wait. But Jim Gavin can now point to, for any 20, 21, 22 year old coming in, he can point to Cormac Costello and go, well, you might be needed at some stage. You could well be the hero for an All-Ireland final. And having that culture within a group must be just such a bonus to any manager.
Well, he has thrown in young players. Like in 2013, Jack McCaffrey and Paul Mannion were only 19, 20 when they came in. So he's not afraid to throw them in. Like, Kieran Kilkenny was thrown in by Gilroy into an All-Ireland semi-final. That was he, 19. But because we're just saying the competition for places, and they're just making each other better. Someone like Cormac Costello has, you would have expected him to make it as a starter, but then whose spot does he take up?
I think what's incredible is the dynamic he's created, where the Brogans and the Connollys and, you know, the Paul Flynns, they buy into this ethic of, we need 20 players to win the All-Ireland today, not 15. And if you look at 13 of the players who started 4 years ago played again last Sunday. So there is this core that isn't changing dramatically. We've seen Conor Callaghan come in this year, Niall Scully and people like that. But the core is still there. And he's leaning heavily on this core. There isn't this huge turnover that you'd imagine. There's this thing that you need to keep changing. You need to keep changing one or two positions every year to stay fresh. He's actually just managing this extraordinary squad and keeping the same core, and it's a very impressive achievement.
Do you see any way they don't win five in a row?
Yeah, like, it wouldn't surprise me if Dublin won three of the next five or four of the next five. I mean, if Kerry had won the five in a row, right, would they have then won, come back and regrouped and won the next three? Like, it wouldn't surprise me if someone caught Dublin next year, but then they went on to win, because I do think that they're geared as a county to consistently be up there and probably win. But no, there's going to be a massive challenge from, again, I would say, Mayo next year. It'll be very interesting how Kerry are possibly caught a little bit between they've obviously got a brilliant crop coming through, but it's a different level. It's like college football or college basketball going to the NBA. For those guys to be integrated, it probably could take Kerry a couple of years, but they're proud counties and they're going to be right challenging there again. But Dublin are obviously, because what I was saying, the team to beat. And
sometimes, the proof of greatness is how you respond
to defeat.
I mean, that's the one thing that you'd have to hand Mikko, that Kerry were stopped in the 5-in-a-row bid, didn't get out of Munster the following year, and then won 3 in a row. You look at how Kilkenny dealt with the defeats of 2010, 2013. Like Mary mentioned, the Kerry team of the noughties, and they were in 7 out of 8 finals, I think. But I think the reason that people hesitate to put them right up there is the 4 finals they won, 2 against Mayo, 2 against Cork, they won them easily. They weren't really hugely competitive finals. Mm-hmm. And they had that problem with Tyrone, that they lost 3 mm-hmm. championship games to Tyrone. They had that problem of losing to Armagh. And they lost to Dublin then in 2011. And, to play in 7 out of 8 All-Ireland finals, they should be right up there. But I think that's why there's an asterisk under that Kerry team.
But I think sometimes we can look at it very shallow. We'll just look at, the final. Those guys are training in January. Those guys are doing things that we'll never see to get better. Dean Rock became a better free taker. Stephen Cluxton, I believe, had another coach in this year to sharpen up something, right? So he's won all those All-Irelands, and he is at 36 years of age looking to get even better. That's what it's about. But like going back to Kerry, it's been thrown out about questioning their greatness, even Cullum's. But the All-Ireland final in 2006 was the quarter-final against Armagh. That was a proper team. Mm. And Armagh brought them to the brink. That was a serious game of football. And I know the Dublin team of Pillar Caffreys was a bit short of obviously this team. But that semi-final between Kerry and Dublin in 2007 was an epic game. And you're talking about coolness under pressure. How Kerry worked out their last 2 points in that game was phenomenal. So they were a brilliant team too. So just to reduce it to who was the final,
reductive. And it was Dublin beating Mayo in the semi-final this year by a point and an epic, and destroying Tyrone in the final. You'd probably be looking at this Dublin team in a totally different way even again. That they are so far superior that they did do that demolition job in the final that we've been waiting for. Tomorrow's game, it is Mayo and Dublin again, and it's Dublin, it's the flip side for them. 3 defeats in a row. How are you calling it?
It's interesting because I suppose for the first time in a long time there's been a bit of argy-bargy between the managers during the week with Mick Bowen's comments about Corrs Daunton.
Quite a bit of edge between everything now involving Mayo and Dublin at the moment. I don't know if it's safe for us up here anymore.
So I think that's definitely added to it. I suppose when you look at it, if you look at both their paths to the final, Dublin have, beaten Division 2 teams the whole way along, bar, Kerry in the semi-final. You look at Mayo, had a poor performance against Galway. Galway were tipped to get to semi-final at least. Then they went on to beat Donegal, who were tipped to actually potentially win the title. Then they get to a semi-final. They're playing the reigning champions, who are going for 7 in a row, who won a National League title in May and defeated Donegal. So they've beaten... I think they've more kind of come up against more, and I think the comments this week by Mick Bowen, I think it'll be interesting to see whether it'll backfire on them or whether they won't.
Is there any truth that Cora intimidates referees?
Personally, I would say not. I think she's a very astute player, knows how to play the game in the sense that she knows how to win her freeze. And if you do look closely, she's been double teamed, she's been triple teamed, if you have 3 players hanging off you, I think there's going to come a point when you're entitled to a free. I personally don't think there was any truth in it. It was a bit disrespectful, but I suppose Mick said what he had to say, so it'll be interesting to see how it goes tomorrow. I think Mayo could do it, yeah.
What do we think, lads?
I would think that Dublin will probably just edge it. I think the experience they've had now, actually Mayo ladies have had the experience of the league game, and a bit like the men's games, the games between the two teams are epic. I mean, that semi-final last year between Dublin and Mayo ladies was a gripping game. I just think that actually that's a good point that Mary makes about the path to the final. Dublin haven't been tested since the league, really. That's one of the anomalies, I would say, off the women's competition. I just think that I could see Dublin just edging it.
I wouldn't pretend to know, Nathan, to be honest. All I do know is I'm really looking forward to the game. And my 13-year-old daughter, Jacinda Mary, out there, she is going to Croke Park. And, you know, I'd love her to be wearing a tip jersey all the time, obviously. But she's a devout Dub, and she will be desperate for Dublin to win after three defeats in a row. So it's the build-up, and Mick Bohan's comments have added to it.
Yeah.
There's an energy about this game that you're really looking forward to.
And like if Dublin won, obviously, God, you wouldn't begrudge them either. You know, they've had three massive, you know, hurting defeats. They haven't won it since 2010. Mayo haven't won it since 2003. And I suppose what people tend to forget about is the hurt that Mayo have gone through as well. They could potentially have had more All-Irelands.
Yeah, we'll have full coverage of it on tomorrow's show. I managed to get my two boys into Mayo jerseys last week. They've told me, we're done with that. We're living in Dublin. This is where all the success is. We're going with the blue from now on. There's only so much pain we could take. Mary White, Vincent Hogan, Kieran Shannon, thanks as always for coming in.
Off the Ball on News Talk. In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.